And welcome to Studio 2 inside Studio 3. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I am Cherry Gregg. Yeah, we are in a different studio. It feels different in here.
Yeah. Say that again, by the way. I don't think the mic was on.
Oh, yeah, it's on now. It feels a little different.
It does feel
a little
different.
Now that we're in Studio 3, I'm so used to Studio 2, but we're getting it all redone.
Yes.
And
working out the kinks.
A little bit of a makeover there.
We should say, because we are, so the show Studio 2 literally takes place inside
Studio 2
of WHYY. This week, we are literally inside Studio 3 because Studio 2 itself is getting a makeover. We are not getting makeovers. Sadly. But our studio is getting a makeover, and it will lead to some exciting stuff that hopefully we can announce pretty soon.
Yes, I can't wait to share with our audience. But today, two weeks since the election, time is flying.
Oh, was it really? Wow. Yeah,
time is flying. And
Fortnite.
Yeah, that's what it is. And, you know, since the election, President-elect Donald Trump has been rolling out his picks for top cabinet positions.
Swiftly.
Yeah, and today we're talking about Robert F. Kennedy Jr., he's Trump's pick for Secretary of Health and Human Services. If you don't know who he is, we'll tell you quickly. Born into political royalty, he made a name for himself across the globe as an anti-vaccine activist. He ran as an independent for president in the last election, dropped his bid to support Donald Trump. And now, if he is confirmed as the Secretary of Health and Human Services, he has vowed to make America healthy again. We're going to bring in a little panel of experts. They're going to help us sift through some of RFK's proposals, why some of them are so popular, we'll ask, and they'll help us get a better understanding of what RFK could really do if he takes over HHS. So we want to hear from you. What do you think about Make America Healthy Again? What does it say about Western medicine that RFK Jr.'s message has resonated with so many people? You can call us 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. We got a lot to parse through today.
A lot to parse through. Actually, as you were talking about his independent run for president, it reminded me that I'm trying to remember exactly when this was, but it was over the summer. There was a bus driving around near our studios. Remember the bus?
Yeah, I remember the bus.
It was an RFK Jr. bus, and it was blasting this jingle. And I think it might have been his dad's jingle when his dad ran for president and was tragically assassinated. But it's a Kennedy, 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 Kennedy. And it's still stuck in my head, the bus that was sort of harassing us a little bit, driving around.
Because this is the center of the political universe.
It was. Not anymore. It's now Washington, D.C. yet again. But speaking of presidential appointments, we're going to start our trio of news stories today with one about the most recent appointment. This is reported, not confirmed yet, but several news outlets reporting that Howard Lutnick will be Donald Trump's pick for Treasury Secretary. That's interesting for a Philadelphia region listener because Lutnick has long and very deep ties to my alma mater, Haverford College.
Okay.
Just outside the city, Lutnick is an alum. He was, for a long time, the board chair at Haverford College and a mega, mega, mega donor to the school. It's a tiny school, tiny liberal arts school, and so there are very few mega donors associated with it. Howard Lutnick is one of them. If you don't know him, he made his money on Wall Street as CEO of Cantor Fitzgerald. He became the transition chair for Trump during this run for president. He spoke at that infamous Madison Square Garden rally. And according to comments he gave to the Inquirer, Lutnick, who I wouldn't say was a big figure in Trump world until recently, according to comments he made in the Inquirer, Lutnick really embraced Trump after the Israel-Hamas war began because he agreed more with Trump's statements on that issue than those of the leaders in the Democratic Party. So an interesting name for local listeners to keep their ears on.
Interesting. And if people are wondering what the Secretary of the Treasury does, that person would oversee national banks, money printing, tax collection, and would be the president's chief advisor on the economy. So we're talking about tax cuts. We're talking about those tariffs. It's a big job. And, you know, I know I was like thinking, Avi, what will our role be in something? because sometimes we have to give a civics lesson because people haven't really dug into what all these departments do. So that person will be possibly connected to us, you know, and this region will be the chief economic advisor for President-elect Donald Trump.
And of note, Lutnick is a huge booster of cryptocurrency.
Mm.
So to have someone with that background in that position is going to be fascinating. All right, story number two, Cherry.
Yes. Well, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court has again ruled that undated or misdated mail-in ballots cannot be counted. This is the second guidance that comes from the state's top court, and it comes after election officials in several Democratic-controlled counties pushed to count these misdated or undated ballots in spite of a high court ruling earlier this year that said that they should be excluded. Under Pennsylvania law, return envelopes must be dated. The Republican National Committee and Pennsylvania's Republican Party, they asked the court to intervene.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, Dave McCormick's campaign joined that lawsuit last night, and last night the court rebuked these Democratic election board officials. You know, even the governor came out and said, look, you know, election officials in these counties, you have to listen to what
Democratic
the court
governor. Yeah.
says. Yeah. And you know, Senator Casey, longtime incumbent here, has not conceded his race. McCormick, his challenger, who has been called as the victor by the Associated Press, is up around 17,000 votes. And the total number of ballots that are in question is around 10,000, not enough to make up Casey's deficit here. But he's refused to concede at this point because, you know, there has been an automatic recount that was triggered because the parties are less than 0.5% separated. And so that is still there. But this question of whether or not excluding undated or misdated ballots raises the question of whether or not it's constitutional. People have said that the old court ruling said it would be unconstitutional to not count them. And that's why there's this dispute. But hey, the high court has spoken in this state. If the legislature wants to change it, they'll have to step up. But right now, undated and misdated ballots cannot be counted.
Just another example of how we are still living in the shadow of the pandemic.
Yes.
And it has influenced everything about this election cycle, including on this front. You know, it is a shame that we still have all of this confusion in our election system. There are many states, including many Republican-run states, that have far more efficient, far more clear systems for counting mail ballots, early ballots. So, you know, we have a lot of work to do here in Pennsylvania. I don't think it's opinion to say that Republicans have dragged their feet on this issue in Harrisburg, that Democrats have pushed for clarity on much of this, and they have gotten a lot of pushback from Republicans who would also like to see this coupled with other types of changes in terms of voter ID, et cetera, that are tied to elections. So Pennsylvania, split government here. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to get things done. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we end up with a morass like this.
Final story.
Final story.
In our trio of stories.
You're going to let that one land.
Yeah, yeah, I'm going to let that land there.
Okay. So I like to, I'm always reading old newspapers. That's kind of my...
That's your hobby.
That's my hobby.
Yeah.
That's my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this morning, I was just thumbing through digitally the Philadelphia Daily News from 25 years ago today.
Yeah.
25 years ago today. 1999.
Wow. 1999 was 25. Oh,
it sure
goodness.
Was. It sure was. Neither of us were born yet. This is a headline from the Philadelphia Daily News on this day 25 years ago. Lady and the Trump at Penn, the Donald Mulls run at presidency. It is a surreal story from 25 years ago today about an interview that Donald Trump did with MSNBC's Chris Matthews on the campus of Penn, talking about his ambitions to run for president as a candidate for the Reform Party.
Interesting.
And he did sort of end up doing this, although he then dropped out and Pat Buchanan ultimately became the nominee. You can read through the whole thing. I've actually posted it on my Blue Sky account.
Ooh, you're on Blue Sky now. You're fancy.
Avi-WA. But it's a surreal story in many regards. One of which is the fact that Trump says he wants his VP to be Oprah. She declines.
Wow.
He calls Pat Buchanan a racist and a lover of Adolf Hitler. Interesting how that has boomeranged back around. But also just reading about Trump's policy positions 25 years ago, it's almost unrecognizable from, you know, what he ended up running on. So, you can check out the whole story on my Blue Sky account at Avi-WA.
Yeah. And what stood out to me is that the sub headline was, he said, I would not run under any circumstances unless I could win the whole thing. Also, Chris Matthews said, Trump should not be written off.
He was right about that.
He was right.
Just one policy note. Mm-hmm. In this interview with Chris Matthews, Trump, one of his headline proposals is a mega tax on the mega wealthy to eliminate the national debt.
Wow.
Just
wow.
That entire sentence is almost incomprehensible today. So I guess now we'll talk about today Donald Trump and who he's been nominating for big cabinet positions, including RFK Jr. That's the topic on today's show.
What do you think about Make America Healthy Again? Email us, studio2@whyy.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is Donald Trump's presumptive nominee to lead the Department of Health and Human Services. Kennedy promises to make America healthy again by fighting the chronic disease epidemic and cracking down on big pharma and big food. But his likely appointment has many public health experts worried. Let's listen to some of the claims RFK has made in the past.
And allow parents to make up their minds about, you know, whether they want to use vaccines for their children. Each of those vaccines, that ought to be a free choice. The FDA have been captured by the industries they're supposed to regulate, and they all have an interest in mass poisoning the American public. Seed oils are one of the most unhealthy ingredients that we have in foods. Yellow food coloring, it's associated with depression, autoimmune injuries, and ADHD.
RFK Jr. is one of the country's leading anti-vaccine advocates, and some of his statements have been labeled conspiracy theories and junk science, but his message has resonated with a lot of Americans. And we're not just talking about Democrats or Republicans. There is a growing coalition that cuts across gender, political, racial, and cultural divides of people who are skeptical of the major health institutions that Kennedy is primed to oversee.
So let's talk about Kennedy's plans and what his appointment will mean for public health. We have a few guests with us this hour. Joining us now in our Philadelphia studio is Dr. Zeke Emanuel. He is a bioethicist and vice provost of global initiatives at the University of Pennsylvania. He served on President Biden's transition COVID-19 advisory board and as a health advisor in the White House under President Obama. Zeke Emanuel, welcome to Studio 2.
It's great to be here with you.
Also with us is Dr. Nyree Dardarian, a registered dietitian and professor in the College of Nursing and Health Professions at Drexel University. Nyree, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And listeners, our question to you today, we have two of them. What do you think about Make America Healthy Again? And what does it say about Western medicine that RFK's message has resonated with so many people? You can email us, studio2@whyy.org, or call 888-477-9499.
So many emails already. Mary says, make America healthy. Never going to happen under the GOP. They are pro-corporate America, and the lobbies are too powerful. I personally would support the effort. I'm afraid RFK's fringe science views will do more harm than good. So that sets us up because Mary is sort of on all sides of this. And I think a lot of Americans are as well, Zeke Emanuel. So when you got the news that he was going to be the nominee, RFK Jr., that is, where did your brain go? And tell us, give us a sense of where you see common ground with him and where you see harsh disagreement.
Well, I think common ground came out of that question and that response from that listener, which is he is hostile to corporate interests dictating, say, food policy or at least the way we approach food policy. I think the most two most important things that he has advanced that I am very sympathetic to, and I think a lot of people who care about the public health are sympathetic to, is one, ultra-processed foods and their impact on the American diet and therefore American health. They have been correlated with causal to increased calories the more you eat. Ultra-processed foods, which make up about 60% of the calories in the American public. And I think most nutritionists, most experts in this area think we have to reduce them and that they're a real problem. Like Marion Nestle, who's a professor at NYU, talks about the middle of a supermarket being the junk aisles, and it's a junkyard. And I think most people who think about public health worry about that area and want to reduce consumption, and RFK Jr. does.
Yeah.
So I think that's an area of common ground with a lot of public health experts. The second area is chronic illness. 60% of Americans have a chronic illness, and many have multiple chronic illnesses. It consumes about 85 to 90% of all U.S. healthcare dollars, that $4.5 trillion we spend on healthcare. Getting our arms around chronic illness is absolutely essential. And I think his idea that we have to address those chronic illnesses.
Putting more focus there.
Absolutely. Priority in research, priority in care, coordinating care for people.
As opposed to putting emphasis on what else?
There are lots of other things. Acute illnesses, very high-tech interventions. You know, the main chronic illnesses we have are heart disease. Hypertension is a key driver of that. We have 110, 120 million Americans who have high blood pressure. Diabetes, 38 million Americans have diabetes.
And yet it's not sexy. It doesn't get all the research dollars.
Well, we know that hypertension is very poorly controlled in this country. Depending upon how you want to measure it, it's either less than half of the people have hypertension controlled or less than a quarter of the people have hypertension controlled. We know we can get up to 80%, but we don't. And focusing on that would be a major, major win. Controlling blood pressure is the single biggest intervention we've done in the last 70 years to reduce mortality in America, more powerful than smoking cessation.
Wow.
Get that.
So we know, Zeke, where you agree and where you feel like there's some alignment between his policies. And so I want to get that from Nyree, who's on the call. Nyree, where when you heard about this appointment with RFK Jr., where did you fall? What were there policies that he is pushing that you said you agree with?
Yeah, personally, I am in alignment with some of his goals to enhance the health of Americans through the reformed approach to the food system. A lot of the things that Zeke had said, I also agree with, but I am an evidence-based practitioner and committed to health and science. So I want to focus more on research-backed policies, but I, you know, hypertension, diabetes, yes, but these diseases that are chronic do stem from obesity. And what I really liked about some of the things that RFK was saying is things that health practitioners constantly want to focus on, which is prevention. So implementing these health initiatives to promote healthy lifestyles, and that stems into allowing for preventative measures to be covered by health insurances so that we can lean into early detection and then management instead of putting all of the money into, you know, after the person has these diseases, which is not cost effective.
Let me read this email actually from H, who says, I'm a nurse practitioner who's been working in the healthcare system for 50 years. And the problem we have is that it's all about huge profits. Mm-hmm. And basically, she says, the philosophy is to wait until the house is on fire and then try to put it out, which is kind of what you two are talking about. That said, here's a comment from Jo Lynn. I can't believe you are sane washing RFK Jr. He's a dangerous threat to public health. I expect more from your otherwise excellent program. So
we got
to
dig into the other side now.
Yeah. Zeke Emanuel, where do you see fundamental disagreement with RFK Jr. and what do you see potentially as his threat, whether it's as an administrator with the government or just by having a bully pulpit?
Well, I think there are let me highlight two areas. There are many areas, but I'll highlight vaccines, which he and I very strongly disagree on, and I think that is a serious threat to the United States and to the world, I might say. And the second area I think that is really important is the role of federal agencies and his desire to clean house and fire a lot of people, and that is going to leave us defenseless. I'll get back to that. But the first thing is vaccines. You know, the first vaccine was developed in the late 1700s. Mm-hmm. We had a vaccine for smallpox, right? And since that time, they've saved hundreds of millions of people, the single best medical intervention to save people's lives. We no longer have smallpox, and we got rid of it not by wishful thinking, but by a vaccine. Just in the 20th century, 300 million people had smallpox. It's estimated that in the last 50 years, vaccines have saved 150 million lives worldwide. Just think about polio. You know, parents were dreadfully fearful every summer that their kid would get infected and be paralyzed. And then in the 50s, the Salk and Sabin vaccines mm-hmm. came along, and none of us worry about kids getting polio and being paralyzed.
Yeah.
That's a huge victory. And the same thing goes for mumps and measles mm-hmm. and rubella and tetanus and diphtheria and on, chicken pox, etc. Those are proven. Do some people get harmed by getting a vaccine? The answer is yes. There's no medical intervention in the world, including a blood draw, mm-hmm. where people don't get some risk of harm. Is the benefit way outweigh the harm? Yes, absolutely. People benefit. Is it tragic when people get harmed by a vaccine that's supposed to prevent disease? Absolutely. But it's more tragic when many more people get a very serious illness like polio. So that's the first thing. I think his policies on vaccines worry me, and just his presence is going to do mm-hmm. something else, which is you're a drug company. You could invest in vaccines or you could invest in another drug. Where are you going to go? Well, with RFK Jr. there, the risks are going to go up for vaccine approval. You're going to shift your focus and your research. Not only is America going to suffer by fewer vaccines, the world will suffer. We do a huge amount of that research and development.
And David comments, make polio great again, talking about referring to, you know, there could be potentially a rise of some diseases that we in America are no longer seeing and haven't seen for a long time. But one of the things that RFK says is that he wants people to have choices and to be able to choose. Explain, because some people say, well, what's wrong with having choices and making individual decisions as a parent as to whether or not you want to vaccinate your children? Explain what problem this causes.
It's called herd immunity. Protecting people from illnesses is not something each of us decide. It's a matter of getting the vaccines to enough people so that the illnesses don't arise. And we see measles is the sort of canary in the coal mine, because for measles, you need about 95% of the population vaccinated.
Super contagious.
Super contagious. And if it falls below 95%, then you get measles outbreaks. Kids end up in the hospital, both suffering and costs go up, and some measles doesn't kill that much, but others of these do kill, whether it's meningitis or tetanus. And that's a serious, serious problem. Same thing with flu, by the way, and COVID. You need to have a certain amount of the population vaccinated to have protection from those illnesses. And if people are deciding, we know that areas where people decide have lower rates of vaccination, less herd immunity. Places like Mississippi that don't have religious exemptions, don't allow parents to decide, have much higher rates of vaccination. And, you know, people rely, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. people who don't get their kids vaccinated rely on everyone else to get their kids vaccinated to get those benefits. And that is, you know, the free rider problem. So yeah. I'm very worried about that.
I want to talk more about that, including where you see RFK posing the biggest threat, whether it's because of changes mm-hmm. he will make or just because of his presence discouraging people from getting vaccinated. But we do have to take a break before that. Let me give out the number one more time. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. We're talking about RFK's promise to make America healthy again. Do you agree with it? What do you think it says about Western medicine that so many people do seem drawn to that message? This is Studio 2. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We're talking about Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s message to make America healthy again. We have a lot of comments coming in from our listeners right now, but let me reintroduce our guests. We have Zeke Emanuel, the Vice Provost for Global Initiatives at the University of Pennsylvania. We also have Dr. Nairi Dardarian, a registered dietitian and professor in the College of Nursing and Health Professions at Drexel University.
And our questions for you today: what do you think about Make America Healthy Again? And what does it say about Western medicine that RFK's message has resonated with so many? Email us, studio2@whyy.org, or call 888-477-9499.
I want to read this email from Beth, who says, I think that Kennedy as head of health and human services is a nightmare. Putting someone with absolutely no expertise in charge does nothing to increase trust in the health sector, but will do a lot of real damage to citizens. And so, Zeke, we were kind of talking about, Kennedy a little bit on the other side of the first side of our break. I want you to talk about HHS, what it does, and what kind of person usually leads, this huge agency?
Well, I worked at HHS, mm-hmm. at the NIH for about 15 years. And one of the things I have to say about all the people at HHS that I interacted with is, whether you agreed with them or disagreed with them, dedicated to mission, to improving America's health, was really top of mind. And they were really committed. And one of the things I'm very worried about is RFK's claim is he's going to clean house, he's going to get rid of a lot of these people, he's going to reduce the number of people there. First of all, we can't do that now. It would be very bad. We've got the FDA that oversees the safety of the food supply, that regulates and oversees drugs and makes sure they're safe. And we've got the CDC that is monitoring and doing surveillance on infectious disease. And we're teetering on the potential outbreak of an H5N1 influenza around the country. Eliminating people who can monitor, do the surveillance, do the sequencing, that is a recipe for potential disaster in our crippling our ability to respond to a healthcare emergency like H5N1. We had an emergency just recently. It required a lot of people and a lot of hands on deck. It required research at the NIH, rapid approval by and oversight by the FDA to make sure things that were approved worked and things that didn't work were not approved. And I think firing people is going to make it very difficult to respond effectively. And I'm very afraid of that. This idea, we have too many people and we're just going to cut it. That's common, but inside the agency.
Can someone who's the head of HHS, what powers do they really have? Are they just, an influencer when it comes to policy? Can they actually implement things given the number of agencies that fall within the umbrella?
Yes, they can influence things and they can fire some people. Now, some people are government civil servants and they're protected by civil servants regulations, thankfully, but not everyone is. There's a way of hiring people that isn't civil servant and they can be fired. And those are typically the most senior, experienced, knowledgeable people at agencies. And that's the scary part. I think
you were also saying that you find it alarming that he impugns the character and the motivation of the civil servants themselves.
Yes.
And that could have a chilling effect on the work?
Absolutely. People are dedicated, and if they're being questioned, if they're being threatened, they'll be hesitant to make important calls.
Okay.
Do they always get it right? Absolutely not. There is disagreement about what the right strategy is given the evidence. But I think impugning people's motivations to promote America's health is wrong. C- Can I make a lot of criticisms myself about the NIH? Absolutely. I don't think they do enough clinical research. Mm-hmm. I don't think they necessarily pursue all the right areas. Could it be reorganized and maybe made more effective? Absolutely. Yeah. But that's far different than we're just going to take a cleaver and or what does they say, run wild over the HHS. That would be a bad mistake.
Let's bring in a caller now. This is Donna from Pensauken. Donna, you're on line one, studio two. We would love to hear your question or comment for our panel.
Hi, this is a comment, and thank you for taking my call. I agree with him as far as preservatives and ultra-processed food and food colors in our food is affecting people. I agree with that. I agree that insurance companies and big pharma really charge people and squeeze people for the medications they need. All of that is lost the minute you started talking about vaccines. I was done. I was. That is not – you cannot get rid of that.
Thank
it should not be a choice. That's how our kids go to school. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Donna and Pensauken. And talking about, you know, preservatives and food additives, you know, left-leaning states, California has banned red dye 3. So this is something that does, you know, hit both sides of the aisle. Let me, Dr. Nairi Dardarian, get you back in this conversation before we introduce our final guest this hour. What did you make of that call, and what do you think Kennedy could/couldn't do with an agency like the FDA, which is responsible for approving, not approving some of these ingredients?
I think that changes can be made. I'm not really aware of, or I've only heard the rumors of getting rid of entire departments. I'm not sure if that is just being, you know, if that's true or it's not true. But when it comes to some of these proposals that, you know, look into these preventative approaches and these other that other countries already have and are using, like the European Union, they already have banned some additives, food colorings, like they were talking about. So I mean, there's no harm in making these changes, reducing ultra processed foods. I mean, these are things that are already done in Nordic countries, and cleaning up toxic chemicals. I know that that's done in Japan. So looking to other models that already exist, I don't see how that could be harmful to our country in any way. And I agree that the center of the supermarket, like Miriam Nessel had, Zeke had originally referred to, that is a disaster zone when it comes to ultra processed food. But it also, we have to take into consideration costs and how much food costs when you're shopping the aisles and so, or the outside or the perimeter of the supermarket. And I think that some of these policies that if they were to go into place, the ones that model what other countries are doing and looking at some sort of subsidies, perhaps that that can help people afford buying healthier food, I'm all for it. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, because the truth is some of these ultra processed foods are a lot less expensive than some of the healthy whole foods, right, that we're all talking about. Feel free to join our conversation. What do you think about Make America Healthy Again? What does it say about Western medicine that RFK's message has been resonating with so many people? You can call us 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. We want to bring in our third guest right now to join us for the rest of the hour. Jasaira Santiago-Hines is a holistic registered nurse and a content creator based right here in Philadelphia. Jasaira, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you for having me.
So we asked all of our guests to kind of lay out their thoughts about this presumptive nominee, RFK Jr. Your thoughts, what do you agree with and what gives you pause from his policies?
I actually agree with everything. I'm a person who actually was harmed by pharmaceuticals, so I am that small percentage that they kind of like push away a little bit on like, oh, you know, the risk outweigh the benefits. And I completely understand that. But when you are on the opposite side and you are the person who's harmed, then I feel like my role now as a mother is to protect my child at all costs. And it comes with food and it comes with the vaccines and pharmaceuticals and the environment and all of that. So I am excited, but I'm hoping that, I hope this is not just like lost hopes. Like, you know, he's like giving us hope and then 4 years later, nothing has changed. But I'm excited if it all goes through.
What would you like to see change? What's at the top of your change list?
I think the biggest thing is choice. Food for sure. We all agree with the ultra processed foods, the seed oils, all the ingredients in the fast food, the dyes. I don't really agree
with the seed oils.
So let's get into this. So this is first of all, Josira, I want to let you finish.
Yeah.
So you're skeptical of food additives that include seed oils, other things, and also you were going to say another area we wanted to see change. You said choice, right?
Choice. When it comes to pharmaceuticals and vaccines, I feel like, you know, when you go to the doctor's office, it's not really like conversation and learning about the side effects, long-term effects. It's like, here, you need this for your child, and that's it. And then a lot of doctors kick the parents out. And like, I am a nurse. I feel like everyone needs care. And I think choice is huge when it comes to all types of pharmaceuticals and vaccines.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So should we get into the seed oils part of this now?
Yeah, I jumped in. Yes.
So Dr. Dardarian, so you had some disagreement there with Josira mm-hmm. about seed oils. That is a sort of a product line mm-hmm. that RFK Jr. has called into question repeatedly. Give us your take on seed oils.
Our diet in general is more harmful than pointing your finger only at seed oils. We use seed oils in cooking. It's an inexpensive oil, and it's not harmful if it isn't ultra refined and it isn't used repeatedly at high temperatures. And I think that there can be policy made around that at like fast food restaurants, for example, to keep using the oil over and over again. That's when it becomes harmful. That's when you change the composition of it. It oxidizes, it causes free radicals, it can form some trans fats in it. But seed oils that are well-processed, cold-processed, and used in the diet in moderation and balance, along with saturated fatty acids that come from animal fats and alongside of monounsaturated fats like your olive oils, which, by the way, if they aren't processed appropriately either, they still have the opportunity to become rancid, to oxidize as well, and to have some of the contaminants through refining. So even when you're using olive oil, you have to make sure that the label says that it's extra virgin or virgin. But if it just says olive oil, it still can go through the same exact processing that seed oils go through and cause the same harm. Mm.
And you look like, Josira, you had a comment in response to that.
You see, you explained all the dangers of it, and you don't know the processing that's being used in the food, fast food restaurants or in the ultra processed foods that right. are available. So all these seed oils are oxidated and go rancid, and you literally listed out all the risk. And I feel like it's just being overused, and mm-hmm. this is why America's so sick. 1 in 5 children are obese. And it's our food. It's our environment.
It's our food. It's not seed oil. You can't blame one food only for being the cause of an obesity epidemic in the country.
Dr. Emanuel, you wanted to get in here.
Let me just raise 2 points. If we think that it's how fast food restaurants are handling these seed oils, then the proper approach is not to get rid of the seed oils, but to regulate the fast food restaurants and how they use things. That seems to be the right approach. We should also
be
clear that, yes, all of us would use olive oil for all of our cooking, would go organic and not have ultra-processed foods. As you pointed out, one of the big barriers there
is expense.
And so we have to get a happy medium here where we do take the things that are most dangerous to us out of the food supply. We do stop encouraging use of ultra-processed foods. One of the areas I do agree with RFK Jr. is get it out of school lunches.
Yeah.
Get it out of school lunches. Kids should not be exposed to that.
Michelle Obama was saying much the same many years ago.
I worked on her Let's Move initiative. Oh, really? I totally agree. And on that one point, they are consistent. And all public health officials are consistent on that.
I want to bring in another caller. We have Sally from Montgomeryville, who's a health teacher. Sally, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Thanks for having me. My comment is no, 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 no. This man okay. is an attorney. He is not qualified. He couldn't be hired to do a health job anywhere. So we have a felon president picking somebody not qualified. And then we're discussing the viewpoints that we like. One crazy viewpoint rules out him as a candidate. Mm. He's not a viable candidate.
Yeah.
And I actually find it really upsetting that we're giving credibility to the few good ideas he has.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point.
There are 100,000 other people who are qualified for
That's
this
a fair
job.
Point.
He is not.
So let's talk about that.
Thank
because,
you, Sally from Montgomeryville. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so like Jasaira, you know, Kennedy has claimed that COVID-19 was ethnically targeted. This says 5G might be used to control behavior. That's, you know, the cell signals. Mm-hmm. Has doubted whether HIV causes AIDS. Lots of things that sort of establishment science says are just nowhere near what the body of proof tells us. What do you make of that? Do you feel like he goes too far with some stuff? Do you said you sort of agree with all of it, but some of it is pretty darn out there mm-hmm. by the standards of modern, you know, medical established practice.
Right. So I haven't looked into all of his policies. My biggest agreement is the ultra processed foods, the mm-hmm. vaccines, the pharmaceuticals, and the fluoride yeah. in the water. All mm-hmm. the other stuff, like I do believe some things are like extreme, the conspiracy theories and stuff like that. I can agree with that, that some things are super out there. But my main things are what I'm here to talk about.
Quick follow up. Do you think the fact that he has bought into conspiracy theories and junk science, and even though some of the things he says, some people have found to alignment with, do you think that should, you know, disqualify him on the face, just being the country's top medical, health professional, that belief should just exclude him automatically?
I personally don't think so, because I think a lot of his ideas and a lot of he does research is credible for me. And I feel like sometimes things come up as a conspiracy theorist, and then years later, it's like, whoa, he was right. I'm not saying he's right about stuff, but mm-hmm. I feel like things that I used to think was like, oh, that's crazy. And then all of a sudden, years later, it's like, oh, that is true. Like the fluoride. We've, talked about fluoride for years, and there was finally like a research that was like, yeah, it is a problem. And it was years ago, people thinking that it was safe.
Wait.
Okay, go ahead.
Let's talk about fluoride.
Let's talk about crazy ideas. Yes, some ideas like bacteria cause ulcers and stomach cancer, we might have once discounted and then proven true. But most bad ideas are discounted and not proven true. The second thing is, I think RFK Jr. is part of a larger social phenomena, which is really, really of concern, and that is what Tom Nichols called the death of expertise. We are hostile to people who are experts who really know their field and have spent years studying their field, and we have given credence to people who are hostile to people who are experts and dismiss them and think their opinion is just as good as someone who has spent years worrying, thinking about viruses or thinking about food and mm-hmm. nutrition.
And but I think what I heard Jasaira saying is, so I think this is the way a lot of people see it, mm-hmm. is that they look at a society where we aren't making progress on seemingly a lot of chronic disease, where people do seem to be chronically unhealthy. And then they're saying, I think reasonably, well, this is the establishment that gave us these problems. Why should we trust them with the solutions? I mean, how do you respond to that, Dr. Emanuel?
Well, I do think we have, and I've written a lot about this, perverse incentives in our healthcare system.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's just the establishment.
Yeah.
We've created a healthcare system that doesn't have an incentive to keep people healthy. Why is that? you're an insurance company and you insure someone. And if you keep them, if you spend a lot of money keeping them healthy for the day where they will, you'll prevent a disease or something, but that's five years down the line, they're no longer going to be in your insurance company and you're not going to reap any benefit from that. Someone else is. That's a perverse incentive we've built into the healthcare system. And just saying, well, the establishment gave it to us. No, this is something that's been built up over 70 or 80 years in America. And to fix that is going to take a lot more than just firing a bunch of employees.
Follow the money, don't blame the scientists.
Exactly.
Kind of what I hear you say.
It's not that, that's a very good summary, Avi.
Well,
appreciate that.
What do you think
that.
About that, Jesira? Because I think what Zeke Emanuel is saying is that, yes, there are all these sort of ill-begotten gains from sort of the way that our health system is set up. But a lot of the people doing the fundamental science within the system are doing good quality science, and they're really trying their best to find solutions for our problems. What do you make of that?
I can absolutely agree because, you know, I'm a nurse and I've worked with doctors, and I know that they truly want to help people. And I do believe it's like follow the money. When you think about our education system, like what we learned in schools, a lot of our education is funded by Big Pharma. So Big Pharma is a business, regardless of how you see it. They're making tons of money on sick people. And other countries, like we have to pay for our health insurance. In other countries, they get their health insurance for free, and they're and I see, like, statistically, they're much healthier than us. They have better food.
Yeah.
So
talking about EU countries, perhaps, there.
So two things. They don't get it for free. They pay taxes, which we seem completely allergic to.
Yeah.
I mean, someone has to pay for that health care, and it's not for free. We have a perverse system for paying for it, I agree. But that doesn't mean it's free in Europe. It's paid for by taxes. The second thing I would say is, look, we have made amazing progress, right? We've got gene therapies that can cure blindness. We've made amazing progress in reducing the number of cancers and treating cancers. Science has been very good to us, and we all, if we got something serious, want pharma to give us a solution. It's true. We don't want their exorbitant prices, hundreds of thousands of dollars for those cures, but we want those cures. Let's make no mistake about it. They do a lot of good, and they've done a lot of good. You know, we've been able to reduce our cholesterol through statins. We've been able to intervene in lots of other illnesses. So we can't throw out the baby with the bathwater. And there are some problems.
Yeah.
And let's be very clear, there are problems. But taking a, you know, axe to something that requires a scalpel and requires more thought and understanding of the system is, I think, the way to go. And I don't detect that that's what's happening. When someone talks about Elon Musk, we're cutting $2 trillion out of the federal budget. Well, that really just belies
and
not understanding.
Yeah, we only have a few more minutes before the show. We're wrapping up.
I'm just going to add here that with academia as well, kind of aligning with some of these things, one of the things that I would want to make sure that keeps on being funded is NIH grants to universities that do impact FDA research.
Mm.
And so That I wouldn't want to see cut out of this budget.
Yeah, and I wanted to, we only have a couple more minutes, but I wanted to really ask about the politics of this a little bit, Zeke, because, you know, RFK Jr. wants to take on, you know, big food, big pharma, some organizations and very powerful lobbies that have been very pro-Republican. He wants to add regulation to certain categories of foods when this is an administration that is very pro-deregulation. How will all of this politically kind of shake out? And can he actually do some of the things that he is proposing, given the politics?
He is certainly restricted from doing it, and it would require legislation and to go through Congress. And it, as you point out, it's unclear whether Congress would endorse many of his ideas. And I think you are pointing out that there seems to be contradictory messages coming out of the administration. This isn't the only area where we've seen contradictory messages. You know, he's talked about cleaning up the environment to improve people's health, and then President Trump says, well, you're not touching oil and gas. And so I think how they end up battling this through and which view prevails, very hard to know at this point and very hard to know, you know, if he's, for one thing, if he's going to be confirmed. There are many people in Congress who, on both sides, who may not be so happy about that.
Well, I think we have successfully, if I'm judging by the comments, angered pretty much everybody today. But thank you so much for listening, everyone. And for, you know, look, we're trying to understand. We're trying to wrap our arms around this. The next 4 years will be dictated by the decisions that folks like RFK Jr. make. So we're all trying to understand it, to see where there's agreement and where there's disagreement, and to move forward. So let me thank everyone who helped us do that this hour. Josira Santiago-Hines is a holistic registered nurse and content creator from Philadelphia. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Zeke Emanuel, Vice Provost for Global Initiatives at the University of Pennsylvania. It's been a pleasure.
Great to be here again.
And Dr. Nairi Dardarian, registered dietitian and professor in the College of Nursing and Health Professions at Drexel. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks. Great conversation, everybody.
Yeah. And thank you to everyone who called in and the many people who sent in emails. Sorry we couldn't get to them all. But I want to say thank you to our producers, Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Diana Martinez engineered today's show from Studio 3 Control Room. Our executive producer, thanks to Kevin McCrory. From Studio 3, well,
nice
from
Studio catch.
WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg for Studio 2. Yeah,
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Thanks for joining us, and we will talk to you again tomorrow.